It's your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, and welcome to another edition of Freedom Friday. That's right. We are the Caribbean Radio Show. Yes, we are the Knowledge Station. And today, we have a guest who has come to the show to drop knowledge. You know, a little pop quiz. Who is the only chick that you know that wrote 40 books before the age of 40, huh? Who is the sister from another mister all the way in Japan representing for the melanated people all over the globe who recently got her PhD? Yes, if you've been listening, you already know. It's Dr. Champagne Urdin. Are you with us today, my sister?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me back again.
Welcome. Well, you know, for everyone out there, we've been tuning in, and recently you've been hitting us up with a lot of great tips on your Instagram account. Can you tell everyone how can they find you on Instagram?
Oh, yeah. And thank you for saying that there are a lot of great tips, because, like, for me, I'm kind of straight to the point, and my Instagram's usually only 30 minutes. So I'm just glad you guys find it to be helpful. But you guys can hit me up on Instagram on, it's called Private Lessons with an S, Japan. Private Lessons, Japan.
That's right. Hit her up. I'm telling you guys, there's an archive of information that will just truly bring a new legacy when it comes to wealth building and global travel. Today's topic is exit strategies. That's right. Whether you are a person trying to exit your job, exit the country, Sister Champagne, excuse me, Dr. Urdin has a lot of great information on what it essentially takes in order to transition and break that glass ceiling. Can you tell us what year was it that you had your first this escape route for exit strategy from the States? What year was that?
Oh, wow. So I'm 40. So I've been abroad, I think, almost about 20 years, maybe 19. And my first exit strategy, the way you put it, I like that, was when I went to China. I believe I was 21 then. So 19 years ago. And I first went to China. That was the first country I had traveled to on a 6-month study abroad program in Beijing.
Wow. How was that to, well, first of all, we know that you would need a passport, and to actually have the travel experience and learning abroad is almost unheard of in the Black community. Tell us, what were the details into, for people who are listening who might be in college right now, how does one get into that program where they are?
Okay, well, that I'm just writing that down, how to get into. Okay, I'm just taking notes. Okay, so first off, I like that you said that, you know, Blacks, you said the Black community, and I think what you mean is more specifically the Black American, the foundational Black American community. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, yeah, and shout out to FBA. We all need to really get a passport and travel abroad, and I'm not talking about going to the Bahamas. I mean, like, going to Europe, going to Asia, going to Africa. We really need to see how our other brothers and sisters live, because that can put a lot of things in perspective for us, to just understand where people are coming from. But to answer your second question, you were asking what are the details. Well, I was 21, so I believe I was maybe a sophomore? I think I was probably a sophomore in university at the time. So I had also, to digress a little bit, I had been studying Chinese since I was, 16, 17, 18, 19. So I've been studying Chinese since I was 16, but some from ages 16 to 19 in high school. So when I, you know, got the chance to go to China, I was super excited about going to China because I had been studying. I actually love the Chinese language. I'm better in Chinese than I am in Japanese, but my Japanese language skills are a lot more fluent than Chinese because I live in Japan. But I got started wanting to go to China because I had learned a foreign language. I also learned German in university, and if I had not gone to China, I would have gone to Germany. But thank God China, you know, they accepted me. So I was able to see the Chinese study abroad program just from posters around my university. So shout out to Willing Jesuit University. They have lots of interesting study abroad programs. So I just followed up with my academic advisor. He told them I would be great. Bam. Oh, and also I got a scholarship to go as well.
See, people, there are funding opportunities out there, but what happens for foundational Black Americans in the traditional high school setting, people are not coming up and telling us what the opportunities are. Dr. Oden, this is a perfect point that you're making. You go, you seek, and you will find. You knock on that guidance counselor, that college advisor's door, knock, and the doors will be open. For example, when I went to graduate school in Alaska, there was such a disproportionate, well, man, it was just almost like no Native Americans to take up the scholarship. So because I'm foundational Black American, they're considered aboriginals. And the six Black students that attended University of Alaska Fairbanks with me, we had our tuition paid through scholarships, funding that other Native Americans were taking that was just going over year after year. So I appreciate that you bringing up that these things do cost money. It's not that you can learn the language and be smart and sign up at the school. You know, it's not that we have the rich uncle with the silver spoon in our family.
Yes.
But we do have funding if you're seeking it. So that's great.
Essentials for the effort. And also, like, I didn't know what you just said was some dimes when you said Alaska and the Foundation of Black Americans were able to get scholarships because we're considered to be aboriginals. I mean, we really need to talk about that because I'm so tired of everyone else. And when I say everyone else, I mean everyone else trying to tell us what our history is, trying to tell us what our lineage is. So I'm glad you said that. So that's real talk right there because I never even knew that about Alaska.
Honey, I never knew myself until I sat in that office and literally left-handed, okay, Girl Scouts, we don't have a Native American, you are our representative. The funding was just limitless blessings for the six students that decided to attend the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So shout out to them for passing on the information so that I can give it to you guys. Tell us when you went to China, what was the next step?
After China?
Yes.
Okay, great. And just let me just interject. I just want to let people know that I also ran track and field from ages 11 to about 24. So I actually also had a track and academic scholarship to go to university as well. Which is great because then, like I said, I was able to get the other scholarship to go to China. But after China, so first I love China. I was there for 6 months. My two best friends, one is from Vietnam, one is from the Congo. The three of us lived together, and we all the students lived in a hotel. We were not allowed to like live in a Chinese dorms because their dorms, you know, I'm not gonna disrespect. Let me just say, we're not allowed to live in the dorms. And we were separate from the other students. We did not even really interact with Chinese students. We only interacted with our own, you know, American or whatever country students were in that program. So that was a little bit surprising to me, but I absolutely love China. But after China, I believe I went back to the States for my junior year. And then after that, you know, what's funny is that I was really, still running track at the time. So when it came to my senior year, like, I was really, really hyped. I wanted to go professional, but I got into a car accident, so that kind of stopped that. So instead of, you know, becoming a professional sprinter and long jumper, instead I decided just to go abroad. So after China, I went to London for 6 months, and then I did another 6 months in London to complete my undergraduate studies.
Wait a minute.
Oh, and I got a scholarship for that too.
Oh, wow. You know, the more you bring up scholarships, the more it's a reminder. Okay, parents, if your child is first generational right now, please, I'm from South Carolina. We have this one thing they give everyone who's a state resident called the South Carolina Higher Tuition Grant. And a lot of times, foundational Black Americans feel like what one scholarship will cover the entire tuition. I appreciate Dr. Oden bringing up the many, many scholarships, many funding opportunities, because once you have tuition that's, what, $15,000 a year, and you take that $2,000, that's a one-time thing. That's not each year for your 4 years. That was a one-time opportunity. So you can easily leave out of college with $50,000 worth of debt when you only thought that the scholarship, oh, wow, South Carolina is $2,000. That just brought your bill to $48,000. So to hear you bringing up that no matter where you go, you had to have a plan to the exit strategy in order to walk through that next door. This is not some, you know, only like miraculous thing that just appears. People, we're giving you the tips to prepare yourself. So when you completed your studies in London, what was your next step?
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. So like I said, I did my, I finished my undergraduate, my BA in London, and then I decided to do my master's in London. So I spent a total of 4 years in London. And also, because we're American, we can get grant and loan money from federal aid, from FAFSA people, to pay for our studies overseas as well.
Okay, now that's a gem. That is a gem. Foundational Black Americans have no clue. So guess what? You know that there are universities all over the world. You know Timbuktu. You know all these places. You know your history. Yeah. So now this is a game changer for everyone that was thinking, oh, I was limited to, you know, staying in state. With proper planning, you also can actually just take your studies abroad. Use that funding wisely. See Africa, for heaven's sake. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah, and I appreciate you saying proper planning, because like I felt like with my life, I did have a plan, but I felt like I had to kind of figure it out as I went along, which is fine for me. But now that we are older, I want you guys to know this is the pathway that you can go. So that way you don't have to stumble as much as we did. I don't mind stumbling because I can write a book about it. But for you guys, I want more for you, for the next generation.
Thank you for that. And for everyone that's listening, if you are in college and you want to move abroad, if you are someone who wants to pursue higher education in any aspect, Dr. Oden in 2022 will have a course. So make sure you reach out to her on Instagram, reach out to the Queen Sunny Honey Show, and we'll get you that information. Once again, anyone who's looking for the exit strategy to properly pre-plan, to learn the essentials, the mistakes that we've made, you don't have to make them, like she said, to know that you can connect that FAFSA to the entire world, not just the states.
Yes.
Man, just get ready, get ready, get ready. Go ahead, and I'm telling you now, because you know that when she opens registration for this course, it's going to fill up fast because of limited seating. Why? Because this sister does one-on-one. And in a small group setting, you can reach a lot of people. If you guys have ever attended big time universities, you know, your professors may not know you by your name. Dr. Oden is not like that. In a smaller setting, you won't be considered by your social security number, and you could be able to ask the questions and take her course and come out and be the game changer. Change your legacy. Woo, sister, I didn't realize you were going to give us so many gems. What happens after? Well, how do you do an exit strategy from London?
Okay, so while I was in London, I was like, okay, this is cool, but I'm ready to go. Like, and plus, I had graduated, so I had to, you know, either leave the country or work. But I was able to land an English teaching job in Japan. So my exit strategy for London was to go teach English in Japan, which I did. The only thing I had to pay for to come to Japan was my ticket, which was only like $600 one way. And did I have to pay? I may have had to pay for my visa too, but that was like $100, something very, very cheap. So my point is, when I came to Japan, the only thing I had to bring was myself, my clothes, $600 for a one-way ticket, and my money that I paid at the Japanese embassy for the visa. And that was pretty much it. And yeah, because when I came, like, to Japan, I already had an apartment set up for me by the company, and I already had a job. So that was the extra strategy.
Okay, people in the audience, this is the part where you realize for less than the cost of a pair of Jordans, putting your vices down, for the tax income people who go through the money real fast, you see less than $1,000 was able to just open that door of opportunity. I appreciate you bringing this up, because there was a time in my life, I remember I had an opportunity to work in the White House. Shout outs to Von Gretchen. However, I didn't have a proper exit strategy, and I ended up not being able to accept the opportunity. So when you say that when opportunity meets us, we have to be ready. You have to have your $700 or you're not going anywhere, baby.
Right. And I'm sure tickets are even cheaper now. I'm just saying, like, it was $600, you know, one way, and then $100 for me to get my visa. That's it. I didn't have to put up money for an apartment. I already had a job, so I was golden. I was golden.
Wow. You know, what is some advice that you would give to people who are not foundational Americans? I know you do a lot of work on the continent of Africa, whether it's Rwanda or Ghana, and there are lots of people who have actually left home who are working in these countries as expats alongside us, who did not have a proper, you know, exit strategy. And you've what is some advice you would give to the new crew so that they don't have to make the same mistakes?
Well, this is my thing for, like, because I'm always claiming I'm a foundational Black American, because I am. But for non-FBA Blacks, when you come to the country, you need to come over here and be respectful. That's number one. Because when I go to Rwanda and Ghana, I'm respectful. I don't, you know, be disrespectful. I don't get in your guys' political business. I don't tell you guys, oh, you don't deserve reparation, yada, yada, woo, woo, woo. So when you come to the country, come respectfully. Because number one, if it were not for FBA, America would still be a slaver country. Number two, the U.S. has a 0.5% quota for Blacks. So that means if it weren't for us overturning slavery, and if it wasn't for us in the civil rights, you guys would not be here. And that's either fact or it's not, but I'm not going to argue with you. So when you come, come respectfully. Don't get in our political business. Don't tell us that we don't deserve reparations. And number two, you probably need to link up with us, because we can give you the intel. A lot of, you know, non-FBA Blacks, they take the size of whites, but whites, you know, to whites, you're still Black. You're just not one of our Blacks. So that's the only thing I can really recommend. Come respectfully, link up with us, and we will get you, you know, the game. I mean, most of my audience, like, for the most part, is men, and it's a lot of them are non-FBA Black men, but I give them the game because I know what I'm talking about. So that's my advice for you.
You know, you're reminding me of foundational Black Americans who've come to the Middle East and have not had success. It had nothing to do with the culture or the weather here. It was bringing over their Western mentality and expectations and putting it on the place. And then once they went back to America, they realized, wow, that was a bit of a plantation. And whatever I just was quick to say something about was pretty good. So that's one of the first things of respecting the culture. And you're right. People have been very open about looking down on foundational Black Americans. Back in the Civil Rights era, they even said that other people were taught by our government to not trust foundational Black Americans. The times have changed, people. The same way we're breaking glass ceilings in the corporations, it's time for us to come together, because once we get together, once the music's playing, we're a universal people. If we can do that with rhythm and blues and jazz and Afro beats, then we need to do that collectively on the job, opening opportunities for people to come into and create wealth.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, but if you're not here to come together with us, then stay back. Stay back. That's all I'm saying. So if you're here to build, build. You want to work with us, that's what's up. If you're here to coon, then go over there.
Okay. Speaking of exit strategies, for all of the expat audience who is already living abroad, many of us are living in Dubai, boo, just living it up, popping bottles, not thinking about the future. And oftentimes I come across foundational Black Americans living in the Middle East over 10 years. I've been here 6 years. If you ask me when I'm returning to America, I'm like, when is Tina returning to Ike? If I can find better, I do better, but this is just the very best thing now. But when I look at the exit strategy, I'm thinking about when COVID came, and that was a game changer. In today's Instagram Live, you brought up what happened in Japan when COVID came. Can you share with our audience about the job market?
Yes. Just let me write that up, job market. And before I answer that, let me digress just a little bit, because you asked me about when I came to Japan. I also had a chance to study abroad in Cuba and Mexico, and that was part of my PhD program. And I got a scholarship to go to Cuba, because that was expensive. I had that money. That was expensive. So I was able to get a scholarship through my university.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. This is why you're an honored guest on the show. Like, where have you not studied? It's not one thing to be a tourist. Right. This sister has come and got the knowledge, honey.
Right. Yep. Just to let you guys know, I think pretty much all of my studies, maybe except for Mexico. Mexico, I actually had to pay out of pocket. But I mean, all my other studies been, paid for. So I'll take that. But yeah, I'm here to, just to guide you guys so you don't have to stumble along so much. But going back to what you were saying, the job market in Japan, and do you mean in terms of like teaching?
Teaching from your Instagram line. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So now what I was saying like earlier today, I was saying how in 2020, let's say June, July. And before I do that, let me just very quickly tell you guys the different types of teaching you can do in Japan. Okay. So basically there are two industries. There's the private industry, there's the public industry. The public industry is where you would be an English teacher at an elementary school, at a junior high school, at a high school. And like also within the public industry, there's also private schools where you can be an elementary school teacher. You can also be an English teacher. So that's for the public teaching. Now for private, that's where you go to your jukus, and jukus are cram schools, which is what I was doing. Like, I think Monday was my last day. That's when people come to you and you might teach a business class, you might teach an elementary school class, you might teach an online class. So that's the juku. And also, I also consider university to kind of be private as well. Because you can be a private, you can work at a private university, you can work at a public university, but those are kind of like higher learning institutions, so they're not mandatory, but people do want to pay money to go there. So when it comes to the job market, what I discovered in 2020, June and July, a lot of my friends who are dispatch teachers, and dispatch means you work for a company, but they send you somewhere else to teach. Most of them really lost their jobs, which was so surprising. A lot of English teachers lost their jobs, which would be in the public sector. So I was just like, wow, I was really quite surprised, because I thought teaching was always something that you could do. And I guess it is something you could do if you're in the right market at the right time. But I was very, very surprised by that. But for me, like, I always have at least 10 jobs. So I'm a private English teacher. I'm an online teacher. I'm a babysitter. And, I work for university now, too. So that's like at least four. I have other avenues of making money, too. But like I said, I just feel like a lot of teachers in Japan are really one dimensional, and they usually just stick to one thing. And you have seen where that was not the right thing to do in 2020, because like if you were not a necessary worker, they just people lost their jobs. And, you know, a lot of people were going in on me for babysitting, but I was like, guys, this is easy money. Like, you can make $25. Now I think I charge 30 or 35 or maybe 40, depending on how many kids it is, an hour. And I can teach literally all day with the kids. So, I mean, that is a lucrative business. And just because you're a babysitter, I mean, who cares? Look at the cash you're making. You're making a lot of cash in a short period of time. So I hope that answered your question about the job market.
Yes, it does. Because we've been taught this since we were kids. People have always told you can't depend on one source of income. And for people who are out here just living it up, living overseas, whether you're stateside or you're overseas, to have an exit strategy is essential. Now, hearing you say the 10 avenues of money reminds me of Daniel Moss, shout out to my undergrad friend, when he became a millionaire when we were in college, and I asked him how. He said, you know, you got to have multiple streams of income, and the simple fact that each of us over here in the Middle East, $100 an hour is nothing for someone to ask you to come inside their home. And if the child takes 3 days to do a worksheet, then that's $300, because the comprehension is more important than just getting through a lot of days. And I live in a culture where if things are on sale, these people don't buy it because they think it's less quality. So to have that as a side hustle on top of having an online store, selling books to every person who's out there listening, if you are a contractor on a military base and you're just gang making the money, go ahead and establish something back home. Secure those assets over liabilities. Buy the block while you have it, so that when you do have to operate in the exit strategy, the only thing you're doing is essentially going back to the States to something that's paid for, to something that you're a landlord for many people, so it's offsetting the cost. These are the essentials that we need, whether or not you're in a struggling job market or if you just really got it going on in your social capacity right now. Dr. Odin, before we close out today's show, what are some final tips that you want to give people, and how can they contact you? Because from resume writing skills to stepping their foot in the door, you are one-stop shop powerhouse for this.
Thank you. Well, the best way to get me is on Instagram. And once again, that's Private Lessons with an S, Japan, Private Lessons Japan. That's the best way. You can also hit me up on YouTube, but I forget my channel name. So just hit me up on Instagram for now. Sorry about that, guys. And in terms of like my last words, it would be to really have an exit strategy. Like for myself, I'm probably not leaving Japan no time soon, which is cool. But when I do leave, I have at least, you know, four places I can go. I don't really want to start over, but if I have to, I have the skills to do that. You just always have to know that a good ride will come to an end. And when it comes to an end, you have to step off and you have to find a better ride. And you can't get mad at that. That's just life. I mean, like I said earlier in my Instagram live about OnlyFans, I mean, if you just look at OnlyFans, you can see that a lot of the content creators are like flipping out because, oh my God, what am I going to do? But the thing is, why haven't you been doing something with that money, you know, besides buying Louis Vuitton and stuff? You know, Louis Vuitton doesn't need your money. They're good. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not impressing nobody. You got to stay at home anyways. So, you know, always have multiple streams of income. You need to be investing heavily. I'm a heavy investor, and you got to have your plan. That's it.
Thank you again, Dr. Odin, for coming on the show. And guys, next time, get ready, because we're going to have an investment chat with Dr. Odin. I'm telling you, this woman helped me out a lot. We'll share some tips that we got from Dr. Boyce Watkins. We'll also talk about cryptocurrency. So we're going to keep it real. And don't forget, coming up in 2020, certification courses online. Tap in, so you can have your exit strategy. go ahead and get yourself your passport.
2022, guys. 2022.
2022. Thanks for the correction. Yeah. Get ready to sign up for those courses. And if you mention the Queen Sunny Honey Show, essentially, we have something special for you, okay? Thank you again, Dr. Oden, for coming in. And to everyone out there, until next time, do bye-bye, boo.